That last detail was of interest to Cord. Did you see those old I-beams stacked in the machine hall? Were those the frames of the skyscrapers? It's hard to imagine what else they'd be. We have a box of old phototypes showing those things being dragged to our place by teams of slaves.
Do the phototypes have date prints?
Yeah, they're from about 700 years ago. What does the landscape in the background look like? A ruined city, or...
She shook her head.
Forest with big trees. In some of those pictures, they are rolling the beams over logs.
Well, there was a collapse of civilization right around 2800, so it all fits together, I said.
The chronochasm was laced through with shafts and chains that in some places converged to clock movements. The chains that led up from the weights terminated up here in clusters of bearings and gears. Cord had been growingly exasperated by something, and now, finally, she let it out.
This just isn't the way to do it.
Do what?
Build a clock that's supposed to keep going for thousands of years.
Why not?
Well, just look at all those chains, for one thing. All the pins, the bearing surfaces, the linkages. Each one a place where something can break, wear out, get dirty, corrode. What were the designers thinking, anyway?
They were thinking that plenty of avowed would always be here to maintain it, I answered.
But I take your point. Some of the other millennium clocks are more like what you have in mind, designed so that they can run for millennia with no maintenance at all. It just depends on what sort of statement the designer wanted to make.
That gave her much food for thought, so we climbed in silence for a while. I took the lead since, above a certain point, there was no direct route. We had to dodge and wind among diverse catwalks and stairs, each of which had been put there to provide access to a movement, which was fine with Cord. In fact, she spent so much time working out how the clock functioned that I became restless and thought about the meal being served at this moment in our refectory. Then I recollected that it was Appert, and I could go extramuros if I wanted and beg for a cheeseburg. Cord, accustomed to being able to eat whenever she pleased, wasn't concerned about this at all. She watched a complex of bone-like levers wrestling with one another.
Those remind me of the part I made for Saman this morning.
I held up my hands.
Don't tell me his name or anything, I pleaded.
Why can't you talk to the Eta?
She asked, suddenly irritated.
It's stupid. Some of them are very intelligent.
Yesterday, I would have laughed at any artisan who was so presumptuous as to pass judgment on the intelligence of anyone who lived in a consent, even an Eta. But Cord was my sib. She shared a lot of my sequences and had as much intrinsic intelligence as I. Fraws were sterile, so that we could not impregnate sewers and breed a species of more intelligent humans inside the consents. Genetically, we were all cut from the same cloth.
It's kind of like hygiene, I said.
You think the Eta are dirty?
Hygiene isn't really about dirt. It's about germs. It's to prevent the spread of sequences that are dangerous if they are allowed to propagate. We don't think the Eta are dirty in the sense of not washing, but their whole purpose is to work with information that spreads in a promiscuous way.
Why? What is the point? Who came up with all these stupid rules? What were they afraid of? She was quite loud. I'd have cringed if she had talked this way in the refectory. But I was happy to hear her out alone in this chasm of patient, deaf machines. As we resumed our ascent, I searched for some explanation to which her mind might be open. We had passed above most of the complicated stuff now, the machines that moved the clock's dials. All that remained were half a dozen vertical shafts that ran up through holes in the roof to connect with things on the Starhenge. Polar drives for the telescopes, and the zenith synchronizer that adjusted the clock's time every day at noon, every clear day anyway. Our final approach to the Starhenge was a spiral stair that coiled around the largest of those shafts, the one that rotated the great telescope of Sans Mithra and Mylax.
That big machine you use to cut the metal, it's called a five-axis electrical discharge mill. Well, I noticed it had cranks made for human hands. After the job was finished, you turned them to move the table this way and that. And I'll bet you could also use those cranks to cut a shape, couldn't you?
She shrugged.
Sure, a very simple shape.
But when you take your hands off the cranks and turn control over to the syntactic device, it becomes a much more capable tool, doesn't it?
infinitely more. There's almost no shape you couldn't make with a SynDev-controlled machine.
She slid her hand down to her hip and drew out a pocket watch and let it dangle at the end of a silver chain made of fluid, seamless links.
This chain is my journeyman piece. I cut it from a solid bar of titanium.
I took a moment to feel the chain. It was like a trickle of ice water over my fingers.
Well, SynDevs can have the same amplifying effect on other kinds of tools. Tools for reading and writing genetic sequences, for example. For adjusting proteins, for programmatic nucleosynthesis.
I don't know what those are.
Because no one does them anymore.
Then how do you know about them?
Oh, we study them, in the abstract, when we are learning about the first and second sacs.
Well, I don't know what those are either, so I wish you would just get to the point.